You're listening to 3CR, celebrating International Day of People with a Disability. Hi, I'm Helen Gwilliam. In August 2014, the Disability Advocacy Resource Unit, known as DARU, hosted the Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference in Melbourne. This year's theme was Champions of Change, and living up to the title presented an impressive range of disability activists. For the next half hour, we're bringing you highlights from four of the speakers, all with lived experience of disability, and all champions of change. Graham Innes is the former Commonwealth Disability Discrimination Commissioner and a lifelong advocate for people with disability. In his keynote speech, Graham encouraged disability advocates to stay motivated in the face of harsh budget cuts and seemingly entrenched discrimination, and challenged people with disability to take risks and to live the full, self-determining life to which we are all entitled. This is an extract from Graham's speech.
A few months after one of the cruelest federal budgets that I've ever seen, I've been asked to motivate you. Right. So I want to start with the words of a poet of our time. And she is a poet of our time. She sings them, but you'll be pleased to hear that I don't plan to do that. And here are those words. Have you ever fed a lover with just your hands? Closed your eyes and trusted, just trusted. Have you ever thrown a fistful of glitter in the air? Have you ever looked fear in the face and said, I just don't care? It's only half past the point of no return, the tip of the iceberg, the sun before the burn, the thunder before the lightning, and the breath before the phrase. Have you ever felt this way? Pink, from her Grammy Award song, Glitter in the Air. I heard her sing them beautifully in one of her Sydney concerts some years ago, and I was entranced when I heard them. They and a few of her other songs are songs that I listen to regularly on my iPod. Now, many people think that they only apply to opportunities for love, but I actually think that they beautifully capture a broader message for life, to throw glitter in the air, to take the opportunities that life presents and to live life to the full. I'm very much in favour of the view that if you're not doing that, if you're not living on the edge in that way, then you're taking up too much room. But living life to the full shouldn't only be an opportunity for 4/5 of the population. It should also be an opportunity for Australians with disabilities. And despite what the attorney tells us, discrimination still exists, and we can't live life to the full in our present community. And that's why we need advocacy. So let me move from one iconic American woman of today, that is Pink, to another iconic American woman of the 1960s. I'm talking about Rosa Parks. So perhaps you will remember that Rosa Parks refused to sit at the back of the bus. In the 1960s, in the United States, millions of dollars were spent on providing public transport systems. But in many places, if you were black, you could only ride at the back of the bus. And Rosa's actions in refusing to do that was one of the sparks of the civil rights movement. But you might say, that was way back then. It wouldn't happen in Australia today to a particular group of people, would it? Well, I would say, wouldn't it? For many people with disability, sitting at the back of the bus still isn't possible. We can't even get on the bus. And that's just one of many examples where opportunities are not equal in the world in which we all live and work. So let me tell you a story, because it underlines the importance of the work which we all do and the amazing assumptions that we've all experienced often about people with disabilities, about ourselves or about others we know with disabilities. Now, I'd completed a meeting with some senior bank officials in Brisbane. Walking with my guide dog, I got into the lift on the 30th floor of their building at the same time as another person. Now, surprise, surprise, the lift buttons weren't marked with raised letters or braille. So I didn't know which one to press. And turning to the other person in the lift, I said, "Could you please press the button for ground?" No response. Now, thinking that he may have a hearing impairment, you know, remember I used to be the Disability Discrimination Commissioner, so I was a bit aware of those sorts of things, I looked directly at him so that he could read my lips and said, "Could you press ground, please?" Still no response. More puzzled, I reached over and I tapped him on the shoulder and repeated my request. "Oh," he said, "are you talking to me? I thought you were asking the guide dog." Now, my guide dog is pretty good, but she hasn't learned to read lift buttons yet. Now, I'm sure that all of you could tell me many more stories like that one about assumptions made about people with disabilities. And in my experience, most of those assumptions are negative and most of them are wrong, but they still keep being made. So people with disabilities keep having to deal with what I describe, and I've stolen someone else's words, as the soft bigotry of low expectations.
You're listening to 3CR on International Day of People with a Disability. To Graham Innes, speaking at the 2014 Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference.
People with disabilities are disadvantaged in relative terms in today's society. Let's look at three measures of that disadvantage. And I'm not going to talk about all the disadvantage because, frankly, we haven't got time. But firstly, there's a high correlation between people with disabilities and poverty. 45% of us live in or near poverty. This is due to low incomes, fewer employment opportunities, and additional costs due to our disability. I don't need to bore you with all the statistics. You've heard them all before. Some of you have probably experienced them. Secondly, whilst Australia experiences relatively low unemployment, when you think about Spain where it's been up around 30-35%, this is not the case for people with disabilities. We're employed at a rate 30% lower than the general population. And when we are employed, we're usually underemployed. And we are often just employed in one position and forgotten about. And the third indicator of disadvantage is the level of people with disabilities in or who have had contact with the criminal justice system. There are high rates of people with psychosocial and intellectual disability in prisons across Australia. In fact, prison is a significant accommodation option for people with disabilities. And how shameful is that? 90% of women with intellectual disability, 90%, 9 out of 10, have been sexually assaulted at some time during their lives. And there are high rates of violence towards people with disabilities, particularly people in institutional settings. And when we report it, the justice system often doesn't cater for our particular needs, so it often goes unpunished. So those, and many others that I haven't talked about, are the challenges or barriers facing people with disabilities. And we as advocates have the task of supporting people with disabilities through or around those barriers. That's what we're all about. So we're in the forefront of creating opportunities for people with disabilities. And we know that if we don't facilitate those broad options, the chance to take those risks and the right to fail, it's less likely that anyone else will do so. We know that if people don't succeed, our job as advocates is to figuratively pick them up, brush them off, and support them to try again. You know, when I was young, many people told me that I couldn't be a lawyer, and many others wouldn't give me a legal job. My first job as a qualified lawyer, having finished university with a law degree, was to answer the telephone and tell people the winning lotto numbers. And of course, you needed a law degree to do that. And then I was made redundant from that job by an answering machine. But I, and people like you who advocated for me all those years ago, knew that I could. I can't imagine my life without the chance to take the risks that I took to get where I am today. I can't imagine a society diminished because it lacks the contribution that Australians with disabilities can make in all areas of life. And I'm profoundly saddened by the knowledge that many people with disabilities were never encouraged to take those risks and grab those chances. So thanks for the work that you do. to give people with disabilities the chances and the encouragement that I was given all these years ago, because that's really what advocacy is. Don't be stopped by thinking that you, one individual, can't make a difference. Because you know what? The reality is that it's only the individuals who ever do make a difference. So encourage and work with people with disabilities to remove those barriers, grasp opportunities, live on the edge, and throw that glitter into the air. Thanks for the chance to speak with you this morning.
Graham Innes, former Commonwealth Disability Discrimination Commissioner and now Chair of the Attitude Foundation. One of the important themes of Champions of Change was the need for disability advocates to stand firm on the need for the full rollout of the National Disability Insurance Scheme to provide people with disability with the support needed to live an equal life. Many speakers shared their experience of poor disability support and the impact that had on every aspect of their life. One of the speakers was Madeline Sobb, Project Officer at the Youth Disability Advocacy Service, who spoke about the barriers placed in the way of her right to education.
Hi everyone, my name is Madeline. I'm 24 and I'm the Project Officer at the Youth Disability Advocacy Service, and I'm also a university student. I grew up in Newcastle in New South Wales and moved to Melbourne in 2011 to go to university. I attended mainstream Catholic schools throughout my primary, secondary and senior schooling. I was the first student with disability to attend my primary school, and because of that reason I feel as though the school did a pretty good job at providing me with the same school experience as my peers, due to the fact that they hadn't had that experience before or needed to support another student with a disability. However, when I was 7 years old, I had some major spinal fusion surgery, which meant I was in hospital for a long time, and I was in hospital in Sydney, I'm not in Newcastle, so I was away from my family a lot, and it also meant that I was had a lot of time off school. And once I came home from hospital, I spent a further 18 months needing to lay flat on my back, which meant I only attended school 2 to 3 days a week, being pushed around on a portable bed at school. And the school did the best they could to support me during this time, but I still managed to fall behind academically because of how much time I had had off school. And as always, my parents did what they thought was best at the time, but I, looking back now, wish that the school had maybe discussed with my parents about me repeating a year, because I didn't realise how much I had fallen behind until I got to high school. So my secondary schooling was a school that was year 7 to 10, and the school that my parents wanted to send me to was a wheelchair user's worst nightmare, and was across 6 levels and was not accessible at all. And so there was a lot of discussion before I went there as to whether I was going to be able to go there in the first place and be with my friends, because that's what the school that all my friends were going to. And so I was very excited when the school was able to install an elevator and then fix a few other little access issues, and I thought that everything was going to be smooth sailing from there on. But, I was quite wrong about that. The elevator continually broke down with me inside it, and my classroom teachers continually didn't provide me with the support I needed, such as copies of notes from the blackboard, and sometimes a little extra time to get homework and assignments done. I was always a last thought when it came to school excursions, which generally meant that my parents had to drive me to and from an excursion instead of me travelling on a bus with my peers. Two of the biggest issues for me at secondary schooling included when I was in year 8, and I had a physical education teacher who failed me in the subject because I couldn't participate in the practical classes. Instead, I was given activities to do with another student in my class who had an eating disorder and was not allowed to participate in case she lost more weight. It was suggested to this teacher that she come and assess me based on my horse riding program that I was doing on a weekly basis instead of Friday afternoon sport. She didn't like this very much. The second issue I had was when I decided to take on a textiles and design subject as an elective for Year 9 and 10. I was never allocated much time with an integration aid previous to this. However, by this time, I was allocated 4 hours per week to assist me in the practical classes for this subject. As you get older, the workload becomes bigger and I was not supported well enough in my classes. My parents and I continually approached the school about needing more time in classes with an aide, but was continually told that there was no money. My senior high school experience, which was Year 11 and 12, was probably my most positive schooling experience. The school took the lead with organising my transition arrangements and sometimes even thinking ahead about issues that might arise even before I had thought of them. The school already had an elevator, but again, it continually broke down. But this time the school moved as many of my classes to the ground floor as possible. I generally had very accommodating classroom teachers who did their best to support me. One significant thing I remember being an issue was when all Year 12 students were to go on a compulsory school retreat. I had told the school months before that they would need to provide a bus with wheelchair access and a hoist to enable me to stay in my wheelchair for the trip. I gave them the contact details of the bus company who had the right buses. They forgot to order the bus and my wheelchair had to be stored underneath the bus, not tied down, and my support worker had to carry me up the stairs. Not very dignified for a 17-year-old. The toughest part of my senior schooling was fitting in socially. I had 500 students in my year and I didn't feel like I fitted in with my friends because I didn't have an after-school job or I wasn't thinking about which boy I was going to kiss at the party on the weekend. It was really difficult because I felt like it was a time in my life where my social life should have been taking off, but instead I feel like I didn't have the same opportunities to a social life like my friends did. In conclusion, I feel as though we make inclusive education seem as though it is one big scary thing that if we can't provide all of what a person needs at once, then we don't try at all. We put it into the too hard basket. No student's education experience is perfect, and mine certainly wasn't, but I feel as though if we continue to look at students individually, there will always be changes that can be made to enhance their experience. Inclusion just starts with some thought about it in the first place. Thank you.
Madeline Sorb, Project Officer at the Youth Disability Advocacy Service. Our next speaker from the Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference is Tina Galino, a participant in the regional launch of the NDIS in Victoria. In this brief but powerful presentation, Tina talks about her life before and after she received NDIS support.
Prior to NDIS, I'd get out of bed, have a shower, get dressed. I'd be lucky if I got breakfast, and then I'd be in my chair till 9 or 10 o'clock at night, without a toilet shift, without assistance for tea, and basically change then and put to bed. And if I needed to go to the toilet to do number twos, I'd have to argue with my previous agency about whether they'd come out and put me on the toilet. And I've said to them, well, if you don't do that, you're going to have to clean up the mess anyway. So that's what it was like before. Now I have a 2.5-hour shift in the morning, which allows for all the things that I need to do that relate to my disability. I feel like I'm getting dressed in an appropriate way. I feel well presented. I don't feel stressed and rushed. I actually get to eat, and that's really awesome. And now I have, as I term it ever so nicely, my afternoon shift is my twinkle tea shift. And I get put to bed. So, you know, when you've got those key things pretty much sorted and running pretty well, you can think beyond the point of, oh, do I stink today? I don't think I really want to go anywhere because I'm so exhausted just getting myself something to eat that I've done enough for the day. Where now, I've got up for the last two mornings at 5:30 to be here, to leave at 7:30 in the morning to attend the conference. And seriously, I wouldn't be here today presenting without that support. And I've actually got assistance through my support plan for to have a support worker with me while I'm at the conference. So that's pretty awesome, I reckon. I never thought this would happen.
Tina, how hard was it for you to think beyond these are the services that I need, to think about this is the life that I want. Was that difficult for you?
The initial, when I went in for my initial plan, extremely difficult because I was still living in crisis. And without the assistance of an independent advocate to actually help me walk through the notion of goals and things like that, I'm sure I couldn't have come back with some goals, but without that initial assistance. Because when you are living in crisis, that's what you have to deal with every day. But I'm so excited about my next plan. Can I just share one of the goals that my family... I think you asked Jane what it meant to her family. I can tell you what it means to mine. We talk about what we want to do next. You know, and we're talking about going camping, me going camping with them. That's a real personal goal that, you know, we couldn't even think like that before.
Tina Galino, self-advocate. And if that doesn't explain the need for a fully funded national support scheme for people with disability, then nothing ever will. Our final champion of change from the conference is Judy Hewitt, a leading self-advocate from Tasmania. Judy was part of a team that represented Australians with disability to the UN Committee on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in Geneva in 2013. This is Judy Hewitt.
Thank you, everyone, for having me here. So, good morning, everyone. I'd like to share with you my journey to the 10th session of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. There is an International Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. It means that all countries should make sure that people with disabilities are treated equal as everyone else. Australians signed the convention in 2008. It means the Australian government said it would make sure people with disabilities are treated equal with everyone else. A United Nations committee reviewed each country. Last year, it was Australia's turn to tell the committee what they were doing for the rights of people with disabilities in Australia. A report was written by people with disabilities and their support and advocacy organisations. This report says, since 2008, things have gotten better for people with disabilities, but could get a lot better. The Australian government and people with disabilities met at the United Nations in September 2013. I wanted people with intellectual disabilities to be represented at the United Nations. I applied to be part of this group and was accepted. Speak Out helped me prepare for the meeting and the trip to the United Nations in Geneva. I met with a group in Sydney and we prepared for our trip. I was the only person with an intellectual disability on that delegation. Geneva is in Switzerland. It's a European headquarters of the United Nations. It took 28 hours flying time to get there from Launceston. We arrived in Geneva. The group prepared statements on what they wanted to be done for people with disabilities in Australia. An exhibition was launched at Palais du National in Geneva by Direct General of the Governor of the United Nations in Geneva and Peter Wilcock, the Ambassador. The exhibition is about Aboriginal people living with disabilities, presented by People First Network. I learnt a lot about Aboriginal people living with disabilities. Did you know one out of two Aboriginal people has a disability or health condition? They have less access to work than anybody else in Australia. They have less education than anybody else in Australia. And many go to jail because there's nowhere for them to live. The next day, we talked to the Australian government about issues we wanted to talk to the committee about. The first day at the United Nations, people spoke different languages, so we could hear the translation in our headsets. The tenth session started. The Australian ambassador talked about what the government is doing right for people with disabilities in Australia. Rosemary and Therese Sands, they presented our group to the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Then it was our turn to speak. Damien spoke about the rights of Aboriginal people with disabilities in Australia. Brett Casey. Brett uses sign language. He talked about people with disabilities being in jail unfairly. Caroline, she talked about the rights of women with disabilities. And David, he said that the Australian government should consult more with people with disabilities. I talked about two issues that I'm passionate about. The first, the Australian government need to close institutions now, and sheltered workshops are not right. People with disabilities who work there don't get enough money for the job that they do. I was told I was the first person with an intellectual disability from Australia to even speak at the United Nations Committee for the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We talked directly to the committee members. The committee members are from all around the world, from Thailand, Denmark, Korea, Chile, and Kenya. I was just lucky enough to speak to a few of these. I thought they were very keen to listen to me and about the issues people with disabilities in Australia. The committee has then asked questions to the Australian government. The ambassador said he needed time to answer questions. The committee gave him 2 days to respond. We had our last meeting before everyone went their own separate ways. We were very pleased with how the tenth session went. The 4th of October 2013, the committee released their observation reports. Australia has to do better for Aboriginal people with disabilities. Australia has to do better for women with disabilities. Australia must close institutions that are still open. And people in sheltered workshops are paid unfair wage, that must stop now. And I'm very happy that the committee listened to me and agreed that the institutions must close now and that people with disabilities need to get a fair wage. And I'm very pleased to be able to put in practice nothing about us without us. So thank you, and have a good afternoon.
The amazing Judy Hewitt. You've been listening to highlights of the Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference held in Melbourne in August 2014. Thanks to all the Champions of Change and to the Disability Advocacy Resource Unit for allowing us to broadcast these extracts. If you'd like to hear more of the conference, it is being podcast from the DARU website at daru.org.au.
You're listening to a 3CR 855 AM on International Day of Persons with, well, they call it disabilities. I don't.
Turn up your radio. I got something to say.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.